Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We are going to have a series of conversations on many issues over the months to come. One of those issues is the future of the industry that's talking to you right now, which is the media. Everywhere in America, newspapers are closing, right and left. They're diminishing. Look at the size of the newspapers around you. Look at the size here in Baltimore of even alternative weeklies like the city paper. It's down to like bread thin.
Three people. Well, they laid someone off.
And you can't even put it in your parakeet cage. And the same for The Sun. The Boston Globe is in danger of closing. Seattle are closing its newspapers. Newspapers are closing around the country. And can online fill the void? The New York Times online, by the way, gets more hits than even the newspaper. They have newspaper readers. The question is, how do you afford the news? And the real danger is, we want to explore this hour with our guests, is the question of the future of our democracy. What is a democracy without journalists and a free press to investigate what's going on in our society, to make it clear for us to argue about and push our democracy forward? I want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. We're joined on the phone by Glenn Ford, who is executive director of Black Agenda Report. His website, and you can go to it now, is blackagendareport.com. If you haven't been there already, he's formerly published The Black Commentator, and is I've heard him on Michelle Martin's show more than once. And Glenn Ford, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Oh, thanks for the invitation.
It's great to have you here. And Stephen Janis is in the studio. He's a senior reporter and content director for Investigative Voice, a new Baltimore-based news website providing investigative journalism. You can check out that site right now at investigativevoice.com. He's a former staff writer for The Examiner, and he is one of the co-founders of that
yes.
site.
Yes. How you doing, Mark?
Good. Well, Steve, good to have you with us. And so, gentlemen, let me get both your perspectives on what's happening in America and how things are shaking out. Glenn Ford, let me start with you, then we'll go over to Stephen Janis.
Well, you're talking about what's happening in terms of the news scene.
Yes.
Its availability and its quality. It's sinking rapidly, and I think there are two problems that I don't believe people pay enough attention to. One is the fact that most newspapers in the United States, those that now survive, are public corporations. That is, they live and die on the whims of Wall Street. And so when we look at their model and their success, we ought to take that into account, that just like all the other consolidating corporations in the country, they are subject to the whims and machinations and evil winds, actually, that blow from Wall Street, and we ought to take that into consideration when we're thinking of their stability. And if we're talking about models for the future, we should be talking about models that are not tied to Wall Street, which creates imperatives for its businesses that may not be consistent with the kinds of operations that are needed for good reporting. And the other aspect is that newspapers coming dominating the discourse before the electronic age historically tried to be everything to everybody. So you got your listings in there. You all the want ads were in there. People used to buy newspapers. I remember very well some folks who didn't care about the news or even the funny papers, they would buy them for the coupons and for the ads. So papers became big and so broadly targeted things that they required lots of departments. Well, in the future, whatever models folks come up with will have to be much narrower, with far fewer departments doing a couple of things well rather than trying to serve everybody.
That's a really interesting thing. I want to come back to explore that idea. Steve Janis?
Yes. But can I take an alternative take on
you
this
may
one?
Take, please do. You have to take any take you'd like.
I think this is the best moment for journalism in a long time. And I think it's because we're deconstructing an organizational premise underlying news gathering that I think didn't work. Because did we get the Iraq war right? No. Did we see this mortgage mess? No. So I think that truthfully, newspapers might need to be rethunk or rethought as a business principle. I mean, I worked at a newspaper, and as a reporter, I would say, I would try to make suggestions and things that should be done that I thought, you know, could make my news gathering more creative, use new technology, and they always told me to shut up and do my job.
Well,
I think we're at a great moment where reporters, because other news organizations are faltering, that reporters have the ability with the internet to go out and start their own news organization and rethink things.
Glenn, what were you saying?
Well, yes, I agree with him wholeheartedly. That's one of the reasons I was talking about Wall Street and its dominance. Those newspapers that had it all wrong, of course, had it wrong on purpose because many of us with far fewer resources could see the truth in terms mm-hmm. of weapons of mass destruction, etc.
Right.
But the large journalistic outfit that stands out is McClatchy. And that's because McClatchy is a family outfit.
That's true, and they got it right. You're absolutely right. They really did.
And they got it righter.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good point. But let's look at the situation with BGE. I mean, BGE,
which is Baltimore Gas and Electric Company,
right,
by the way, Glenn.
There's a tremendous pattern of these bills rising three times in January, mm-hmm. and yet the media coverage has been tepid, you know. So
I'm sure that Public Utility spends a great deal of money.
Advertising money.
Of course.
Yeah.
And in fact, that some of the black newspapers that I've worked at, they were towering presences. And so you would think that a black newspaper would be the great crusader against the utility.
They were once.
Some of them were.
Once.
Once. That's a discussion. There were actually two kinds of, well, if one could categorize them, two kinds of black newspapers. One in which ownership saw itself as role model, and that was principally their mission as they saw it in life, that is to show what they considered to be the positive aspects of black life, which did not necessarily include news of any kind,
mm-hmm.
But certainly not bad news about the community. And not very much news about folk who were struggling, who didn't fit the profile that the ownership thought was proper for emulation by the rest of the community. And then you had the fighting newspapers, and they were quite different. And you know, the fighting newspapers, as times got much rougher, lasted longer mm-hmm. because that was the commodity, the quality of being a fighting newspaper. Is something that the white corporate papers could not duplicate. They could, as integration increased, they could hire more black reporters, but they could not and would not fight for the black community. So we saw that in general, I believe, the fighting black newspapers lasted a little longer than the role models.
Steve Janis?
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, you know, I've been writing a series of stories on my website about a black African-American officer who filed an EOC complaint. Mm-hmm. And after he filed the EOC complaint, he got charged in the second-degree assault case a year after the case occurred. And his attorney alleged that it was in retaliation. I was out on a limb. I wrote five or six stories on my website about the trial, about what was going on. Nobody covered it. No other news site, no other television. So, you know, I think we do have to regain our populist roots in order to make ourselves relevant. We can't look at this as journalists and say, well, the internet's making things free. We have to think maybe we're not relevant. Maybe we've lost our populist sort of our need for the people in the sense that are we serving the people? We have to ask that question.
Well, let me ask the two of you this question then. I mean, there are a lot of arguments about why newspapers and old-line journals, even TV news, have lost their following, lost their viewership, lost their readership. And is part of what you're saying, Glenn Ford, and what you're saying, Stephen Janis, mm-hmm. Glenn Ford, you use the word, the fighting newspapers, especially the old African-American newspapers, Chicago Defender, Amsterdam News, the fighting newspapers of the past that have survived. Is there a correlation for that, for the two of you, between that spirit
yes.
and why people have stopped being interested in papers? Steve Janis and Glenn Ford.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've sort of lamented that we're no longer a monopoly on information, but we've never sat and looked at ourselves and say, do we really serve the public interest? Are we like power brokers, or are we really, you know, afflicting the comfortable and comforting the afflicted? And I think that's a fundamental question, you know, to the newspaper business and news gathering. Are we truly out there fighting for the average person, or are we just, you know, being a kingmaker? And I think our relevance is going to depend on the people now. We can't just say we're the only people who are willing to print. The internet has sort of leveled the field, so we have to earn the trust and the respect of the people and the readership.
Glenn?
The newspaper used to be where everybody got their news from. News meaning all kinds of different information. That was a universal for those who could read. Nowadays, many decades since, there must be a compelling reason to buy anything. There are, and that goes beyond the market for information. It goes into the diversity of products of all kind. But we're talking about information, and there must be a compelling reason, since information is coming at people from all kinds of angles. How that is? What is your relevance? Now, you're not going to be compelling to everyone, not at any cost that would not be prohibitive. So people who want to continue as journalists have to choose the demographic they want to talk to and make their voices compelling.
But let me talk about that for a moment. And one of the things that the fear is about where the future of journalism is going is that because of the net, what you're just saying, Glenn Ford, that it becomes too fragmented. It gets fragmented on ideology. It gets fragmented by culture and race. It gets fragmented by generationally in terms of age.
True.
And the fragmentation, no matter how good the work you all do is, if it becomes fragmented in that way, then it dissipates its power and strength.
I can see that argument. However,
I didn't make that argument.
No, I'm not saying you did. I'm just pushing this a step further.
But I think it can be. I think, you know, certainly the web is kind of provided the concept of what you're calling unbundling. You know, do you really need one organization covering sports, arts, all things at once? Rather, you can be topically fragmented, which means like Investigative Voice. We have a hard news sort of watchdog investigative thrust. I think if it's topically organized, it can be vibrant. If it becomes, you know, like you said, too dissipated, there is that problem. Because truthfully, these organizations don't work without a certain amount of piling on in terms of being able to build readership and advertising. So there is that is definitely something that's like worth considering.
Glenn Ford?
I don't believe we're becoming too fragmented, and the internet is often blamed for that. I believe that we're not catching up in terms of selling our product. I know that doesn't sound journalism like, but it's a big term. I believe we're not catching up with the actual way the marketplace is fragmented, and will continue to be so in terms of how we approach it, and that means that, and when I say we, I don't mean just the people who control websites or newspapers. I mean the entire system. If you have a national audience of 100,000 people of a certain demographic profile, you need to be working in a milieu where you can sell those 100,000 people of that particular profile, pipe-smoking male college professors of age 50. And so the electronic media and the print media are still, in terms of their ad agencies, the way people make money, are still looking at these large numbers, generally speaking. With the champions are still the ones who sell the Super Bowl commercial for a couple million dollars, rather than how we sell those demographics that really are into good investigative progressive journalism, or are into what Black Agenda Report does, that is left political analysis and commentary from an African American perspective. I looked at your site, and I know that it gets respectable numbers, and I know ours does too, and I know Black Commentators does too. The question is, the problem that one faces is that the people with advertising dollars aren't structured for our niche marketing, as they would call it. And that has to catch up before we're able to get proper value for the people that we work so hard attracting.
Glenn Ford is executive editor of Black Agenda Report. You can go to blackagendareport.com as we speak. He's formerly published Black Commentator. Stephen Janis is senior reporter and content director for Investigative Voice. You can go to investigativevoice.com now as we speak. He's a former staff writer for the Baltimore Examiner that folded. And when it folded, he and a couple of others jumped in and created Investigative Voice.
We did.
You did. On your own. You just went and did it.
We just did it. And 9 days after the paper closed, we had it. We hit the...
I remember. It was good. And so the question is, how do we all survive in this world of the media? We, too, at the Mark Steiner Show and the Center for Emerging Media, are a independent journalistic voice. And we're all trying to find our way. And I'm curious to see how all of you out there get your news. Where do you go? Do you know these two sites? We'd love you to go to them now to look at them and give us your thoughts on that. Glenn Ford, you've heard many times on NPR. He was on Michelle Martin debating just a little bit ago, and I heard him there. Stephen Janis is a guest on our show. They're both here now. What are your thoughts at 410-319-8888? The future of the media is upon us. We're seeing newspapers fall apart, but maybe this is a new golden age about to erupt. What do you think? 410-319-8888. Tony at Columbia, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening.
Hi, Tony.
I had stopped reading the newspapers about 8 or 9 years ago because they didn't, with the exception of the Sunday newspapers, the articles didn't give me enough detail or background. So I started reading the long articles in New Yorker, the Atlantic, Harper's, and then going to websites like blackcommentator.com, like Huffington Post, and often you can link to the New York Times article that's relevant that day. And I honestly have not read a weekday newspaper in over 5 years.
Do you feel you're informed these days, Tony?
I know I'm much better informed.
See, there you go.
To read the newspaper.
It's a new golden age. She's right.
And so, do you think, Tony, before we turn to Glenn Ford and Stevens at Janis to kind of comment about what you were just saying, is it a generational issue? The younger people doing it, or is it all of us?
Oh, I get a feeling that Janis is a mature woman. I identify with the way she reads because she reads like I do too.
Mm-hmm.
I only read print media when I'm on buses and trains and subways. Mm-hmm. but we have access to the New York Times and the Washington Post online, and of course, we in journalism have to read the New York Times and the Washington Post.
Right.
We're obligated to do that. If I were not obligated, I probably would read it much less myself.
And on the way to ask Stephen Janis your thoughts, Tony, are you still on the line with us? Is Tony still there? Or is she listening offline? All right. Stephen?
Mm-hmm.
Are you there, Tony?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I actually asked you, too, about Glenn Ford commented about a generational issue and kind of getting your news online. And I'd like to get your thoughts on that before we turn to Stephen Janis.
I'm 52, so I don't consider myself in the younger generation by any means. I just didn't get enough background. I was reading this guy Nouriel Roubini about the problems on Wall Street, the newspapers weren't covering it at all.
That's great.
I read Roubini as well. I mean, and you got that online.
Yes,
it's a great point,
Tony. I'm glad you're listening to us. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Steve, before we go to the next caller, do you want to kind of comment?
Well, no, I was just going to say, I was actually listening to something on, I think, NPR about Pulitzer, and at the turn of the century, there were like 44 newspapers in New York City, 44. I think we could see an era like that where there could be 20 or 30 really good news websites in Baltimore. Think about that, how the diversity helps. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt to have more than one perspective. It does not. This notion that we have to have one grand institution of news gathering is antiquated.
Well, it's also what you and I were talking about before we go back to the next caller here. Glenn Ford, Stephen Janis and I were talking a couple of weeks ago about this idea that organizations like ours in this community that do local, national, and regional reporting and conversations need to form these new cooperative models.
I think so too, yeah.
Working together.
I agree.
That can kind of really bring something really beautiful and new to listeners
Absolutely.
And readers.
Absolutely. You know, and it's really run by journalists, not by the whole thing that Ms. Ford was talking about, which is the corporate, is gone at this point. Can be done away with. That idea that we're beholden to NBC or CBS, who then is beholden to somebody else.
On our way to hear Jan of Baltimore, our next caller, I wonder, Glenn Ford, if you think in some ways that what has happened with Wall Street, what has happened with the bottom falling out of the economy and people trying to figure out what it means to rebuild, that we also have a golden opportunity to do something brand new here.
Well, yes, I think in general businesses will be entrepreneurs will be much more leery of dreaming that they can do that they can go straight to Wall Street with an idea and that's how they'll succeed. I think people will be putting together business models for lots of things, including journalism, that are much more realistic, that are based not on bells and whistles that appeal to Wall Street, but on products that will sell to actual people, and that in general, not just for journalism, in general, is a healthy thing. But just one more return to the imbalance in the sales mechanism, the world of sales as it exists, and these niche markets that are coming out of the internet and how they don't match. In Jersey City, New Jersey, where I'm born, it's a city of about 250,000 people.
Yep.
The daily newspaper is called the Jersey Journal. The Jersey Journal has a paid circulation probably of only 30,000 people. But it occupies a big 8-story building, and it's an institution in the town, and employs hundreds of people. Well, by the time I'd been running Black Commentator for 2 years, we had 30,000 people.
Mm-hmm. That says a lot.
That's really amazing.
But there's no way that we could get access to even enough revenues to sustain our own small team without asking for contributions from that audience, as opposed to the millions of dollars in revenues that came to the Jersey Journal with the same size audience in the newspaper world. And by the way, our audience at Black Commentator and our audience at Black Agenda Report is certainly more upscale than the audience at a mass vehicle like the Jersey Journal, and is more motivated since you have to find Black Commentator and Black Agenda Report, whereas a newspaper is out there in your spatial environment. So the advertising world ought to come to grips with these realities.
Well, I want to come back.
At some point it will, but that may be sometime in the future.
I think that the advertising issue I want to raise with the both of you, too, about how we survive. But I think one of our callers may take us this place. We're talking with Glenn Ford, BlackAgendaReport.com, Stephen Janis, InvestigativeVoice.com. The fall of newspapers is giving rise to something brand new. How do you get your news? 410-319-8888. Write to us here at SteinerShow@gmail.com. And Jan in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Good evening, Mark, and thank you for taking my call.
Good to have you.
And good evening to your guests. I am interested in, and this could possibly also go in with the last bit of your conversation regarding advertising difficulties with the in the publishing business. And that is, I heard a few weeks back that Senator Ben Cardin was considering introducing or had introduced some legislation.
Yes.
That would allow newspapers 501c3 status.
Mm-hmm.
And how would that impact, if any, the newspaper publishing business, and would it be of benefit to people trying to keep their businesses afloat, particularly the small community newspapers?
Jan, you raise a really very important question here, mm-hmm. because the bill that Senator Ben Cardin introduced mm-hmm. would allow newspapers to become nonprofit organizations, but would mean that their advertising and other revenue would not be taxed.
Right.
Which would funnel the money into the newspaper as opposed to going into the coffers of corporate leaders,
yeah,
and could change the nature of newspapers and maybe change how they cooperate also and do stuff in the net. Because right now, if, like the New York Times, if it was a not-for-profit,
mm-hmm,
and not owned by the Sulzbergers, then the millions of readers they get online could connect more with it, and yeah, all the advertising would not be taxed, could change the nature of the institution. So what do you two think Stephen Jennison's going forward?
Well, I mean,
that?
You know, I mean, I personally think that, you know, this is a time to experiment. And if, you know, creating a nonprofit newspaper makes a better newspaper, I say we're all for it. And that's one of the biggest issues is that, you know, if you have BG&E advertising, are you willing to write about BG&E when they, you know, sort of perhaps are not being completely honest with consumers? Are you willing to write about it? So it might be able to separate that out a little bit and create a little bit more independence. On the other hand, you know, I don't know if the nonprofit model leads to the most hard-edged journalism. I'm not sure, but I think it's definitely worth experimenting. Why not? The other model's not working.
Ben Ford?
Well, I know that getting a 501c3 as it now stands takes months and is subject to, to the authorities' decision. I guess what I'm saying here, if this nonprofit status is not a kind of license, and we don't want journalism to have to be licensed by the state, if then it won't really be like a 501c3. It'll be some other kind of nonprofit. But certainly, we Black Agenda Report cannot do its job denouncing the present government and imperialism in general, with a state license. I don't think they'd be forthcoming.
That's a very good point. There is a fraught with peril.
And I'm for anything that makes things cheaper, but the other question that gets raised when you're granting nonprofit status is, well, what is a journalistic enterprise? And who gets this license? Does anybody's website get it? Does anybody's print vehicle get it? That produces stuff that falls within the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
So
can Hustler magazine get it? Can a publication that has nothing to do with politics or even lifestyle that does crossword puzzles? You know, who's to decide who gets this nonprofit?
Well, Glenn, we have to take a very short break. We're going to come back to that. And Glenn Ford is one of our guests, blackagendareport.com. You can go to his website as we speak. Steve Janis is with us. Go to his website, investigativevoice.com, and you can join him there. We're going to take a very short break and return in just 1 minute. So stay with us at 410-319-8888. Melissa in Glen Burnie, you are the next caller up for this conversation, so stay with us. And we have an email from Ron, who joined us here at steinershow@gmail.com. We'll be right back. I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. And reminding you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 70 years later, they're still there to help people during these difficult times. For more information, go to mecu.com. We are talking with Glenn Ford, executive editor of Black Agenda Report, which you can find right now at blackagendareport.com. He was formerly publishing Black Commentator. Stephen Janis is a former staff writer for Baltimore Examiner that folded. 9 days later, he and a couple of others created investigativevoice.com, where he is senior reporter and content director. They just followed a story here in Baltimore about a African-American police officer,
mm-hmm,
accused of wrongdoing he did not do.
Yes.
And it turned out that it might have been because he filed a equal opportunity employment complaint.
Absolutely.
Against the police department, and they broke that. Nor the newspaper in town, whether it's the Sun or the African American or anybody else, broke or told that story. They did it online. So is online our future? Do we have a new creative world we can create out of all this? We're going to find out what you think at 410-319-8888. And Melissa in Glen Burnie, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Mark. Thank you for having me on the air.
Thanks for calling.
I just recently became a listener of your show, and I find a lot of the conversations you have to be very intriguing.
Thank you.
This one today especially, I'm only 25 years old. When I was in high school, our teachers put emphasis on looking to the newspaper for current events. And if we ever had assignments, they suggested for us to look there. And it was very much emphasized, and not really to find information on the internet. I feel like it seems now that a lot of people that are in school now, my younger family members that are telling me that they go to this website or that website, it's just not emphasized anymore on the younger generation to look to newspapers for their current events. They want to go right on the internet and get it and don't even bother picking up a newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that you had this discussion today because it really puts into forethought the amount of time that at one point people were spending as far as looking at a newspaper, reading and getting their information. And then they just go right to the internet now, like, because it's easier or quicker.
What about for yourself? What do you do?
I actually lately have picked up a newspaper because I work in a building that has a grocery store in it. So it's kind of one of those things. You walk into the building, you go into the store, you grab the newspaper. I go to my desk, I sit and read the newspaper, drink my coffee, and then get started with my day.
That's interesting. I mean, I'm still old-fashioned enough that I enjoy opening a newspaper and hearing it fold and reading the news. But I get my I get my news from both places.
That's old-fashioned. Come on, Mark. Look, I mean, but truthfully, don't you read more?
Well, this is only 25. She likes the same thing.
Well, no, she's amazing. I mean, but on the other hand, like I think people read more news than they did before newspapers existed, you know, before the internet existed. I mean, come on. I go to Washington Post, Baltimore Sun, New York Times every day in the morning.
Okay, but
every day.
I guess whether it's print or whether it's the internet and whether it's net news sites or print.
Okay.
The question becomes, though,
is there a difference?
Is there a difference? What I was going to take this is the nature of where journalism is going.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the biggest fear I have is that when TV was in its heyday, the Walter Cronkite days of television, television stations actually invested in serious reporting.
That's a good point.
And looking at what was going on in our society and government and going after things to change things. It was newspapers back in the 50s. That helped lead the way.
Mm-hmm.
First black newspapers, but then majority white newspapers, after they finally got a hold of it, that helped end segregation by illuminating the reality of that to the rest of America, the same with poverty, other issues, the war in Vietnam, and many things I would like that. And what my fear is that now is that we fragment ourselves, that we do not invest in journalism, we don't invest in training people as journalists, and that without a journalist to look inside our government, to look at our society, our democracy is in trouble. Glenn Ford, then Stephen Janis.
Well, you know, we're talking on the radio, but we have not talked about radio. And I come primarily from radio. That's really my background. I go back to 1970, my first job after getting out of the Army. Was in black radio at James Brown's radio station in Augusta, Georgia, and then James Brown's radio station in Baltimore, by the way.
Uh-huh.
And this is the early 70s, just at the point when black newspapers were definitively going down the toilet en masse. That was the golden age of black radio news. It was a very brief period, but it really surely was glorious. In Washington, D.C. in 1972-73, there were three black-oriented radio stations that fielded 21 reporters between them. That was a black radio press corps all by itself. We actually made news. We didn't just follow what the newspapers said. We scoured our communities, and community leaders knew who to call when something was about to jump off in terms of organized
right.
activity, or there were complaints about community conditions. So this black radio press corps in Washington, D.C., and it existed elsewhere across the country, really performed a unique kind of function that was separate from the newspapers in terms of its immediacy and accessibility. It was listened to, as black radio still is, by 85% of black households.
But what about now, but where we're going now? Amazing. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. That was the glorious past, but what about 2009?
And now black radio news has all but ceased to exist. It is extinct, for all intents and purposes, on black-oriented radio stations. And that is a much larger gaping hole than the decline of the black printed press, which still exists. Although in much diminished form. And I think it is an even greater loss because black radio then and still reaches 85% of black households. If there is a black communications mechanism, it remains black radio, and yet it is devoid of news.
I have a thought about radio. I want to ask the two of you in just a moment. But Stephen Jones, your thought on the...
I think you asked a really, the central question. You know, what type of culture of work is going to encompass journalism once it's all disparate and online? You know, are you going to have the same sort of process that ensured accuracy? Are you going to have the same sort of filters? I think that's a really good question, you know, because investigative voice, you know, could just derail itself. We could write crazy stories, you know, and what is it going to be? Is there going to be some sort of shaping mechanism? And I think that is a brilliant question, because I don't know. I don't have an answer for that question. We're going to have all these sites popping up. How are you going to know what is a legitimate news source versus someone just with an agenda who starts a website trying to make it look like news? I think that's a fundamental question. However, I think in that opportunity diversity of opinion, you could have another golden age of internet news, because with all these people keeping each other honest, the more you have, I think you saw a dynamic when The Examiner launched. It was a good, healthy dynamic because you had two newspapers, not just one. I think with the multiple websites of people competing and with people trying to get better stories, you're going to see better news. It's kind of like what
we have an email here, and I do want to come back to radio.
Versions of truth and styles and contents of leadership are tested in the mass marketplace, that is, among the people. And narrow casting, whether on the internet or other kinds of delivery mechanisms, cannot perform that function of reaching masses of people and having an immediate feedback from masses of folk, catching them at drive time in their workaday lives. That is a hole that the internet cannot possibly fill.
And so that's why I want to get back to this radio question.
I think it's
really important. But let me read this email.
Okay.
As we talk with Glenn Ford and Stephen Janis, both of whom's work you can find on the web, as we look at the falling newspapers, what takes its place, how does journalism stay vibrant, how do we investigate our democracy, keep things in this country moving, and not let those in power get away with what they get away with. Stephen Janis is with us from investigativevoice.com, Glenn Ford from blackagendareport.com, and Ron wrote in at steinershow@gmail.com, he says, a great new online source of international news is Global Post at www.globalpost.com, which I just looked up, and it is an interesting website. You can check that out as we speak. Legacy print outlets are dead, he writes. Classified ad sections can't compete with Craigslist and eBay. Display ads can't compete with a former advertiser's own website. Existing newspaper entities, whether currently in bankruptcy or not, are burdened with crushing debt loads consequent to media consolidation. The Baltimore Sun has been seriously confronted with these changes and in every case has responded by becoming a worse product. The only remaining purpose for a newspaper might be journalistic information, but newspapers do a bad job of providing real news, and I think the shoddy news product has little monetary value.
Wow.
Stephen Janis.
Well, you know, I think a couple issues. Number one, journalism is expensive. Hiring somebody to go into a court, like I had to sit through the Terry Love case. I was there as much as I could, but that takes a lot of money to pay someone to do that. Secondly, you know, the lack of relevance. I mean, it's very difficult. When I worked at The Examiner, we would have deadlines 11:30 in the morning, you know, for because they had this whole printing problem, and we would never have space. And we have to cut all this information out of the story for the space. So really, print doesn't really make any sense anymore from a perspective of how news is gathered and how information is disseminated. It just doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense to go and report a full story and only be able to include half the information because there's not room in a newspaper because then the people will advertise. That makes utterly no sense. And then the idea of having my deadlines now are midnight. You know, so I can report a story up to there. It doesn't help with my personal life, you know,
sure,
or my mental health. However, it does. I do get more time to mull over a story and more time to think about it. So he's got a point. You know, print in and of itself might not work in the long run. As much as we like to look at a newspaper and you do and, you know, the woman who called in, but maybe it just doesn't make sense.
And if it doesn't make sense, Glenn Ford, I still want to pursue this point of how do we keep the integrity of journalism alive in this new age?
Well, I don't know how alive it actually has ever been. You hear so often people hearkening back to the good old days. I think the further back you go, the more lies you
hear. Did we just lose Glenn?
Corporate media folks.
Okay.
That is, the New York Times has never been more honest than it is today. It actually is a more honest institution, still a lying rag. But a more honest institution than when I was a kid. What has changed is that the crusading newspapers that reflected real political and adversarial points of view when New York City and other large cities were multiple newspaper towns, mm-hmm. they have died off. But so in the aggregate, we're getting. We don't get that kind of fresh breeze, but I believe that the New York Times is no worse than it's ever been,
But you know, I really think diversity will ensure a little bit of accuracy and a little bit of keeping people honest. You know, if there are three or four news websites in town that are actively, if you know the question you ask, if they can create a business model that works. It's going to be better for people. Maybe they're five or six. How can that? I don't think that can hurt because I think people will keep each other honest. You know, there's nothing like journalists keeping other journalists honest. There's nothing like four or five people looking at a situation.
Well, you know, that's absolutely true. And regarding the New York Times.
But if the business model can work, that's a big question. Big if.
The first project when we began Black Commentator was to harass the New York Times, call reporters out by name. Dissect the stories that they had mangled, and the reporters who had done the mangling. There actually still exists a thing called human embarrassment, and we found that not only did we noticeably change the behavior of at least a few reporters on the New York Times, but they started calling us up in a preemptive way, and this is from a start off enterprise that basically cost nothing, and we were more than a flea on their behinds apparently, these other media, we from the other media, mm-hmm. can have an effect on the large media if we decide set out to do so.
Well, I mean, I guess I don't want to get into this. We could do a whole hour on the New York Times. I mean, I don't. I have some similar criticisms of the Times, but I wouldn't kind of paint them with as broad a brush of as that. When you have, they've done some incredible work in investigative reporting. They've
sure,
got
of course.
People like Frank Rich and others mm-hmm. who do some really, I think, very insightful writing.
Absolutely.
About
they can. You're absolutely correct. They have such talented people. Who can find the document deep in the warehouse, covered with 2 inches of dust? But they can also hide high crimes and misdemeanors that are committed right there in midday.
Can't agree with that either. Glenn Ford is the man who puts out BlackAgendaReport.com, executive editor of BlackAgendaReport.com. Stephen Janis is senior reporter and content director for InvestigativeVoice.com. In the ashes of the Examiner rose the Investigative Voice. And you can join us at 410-319-8888. Is there a new world of journalism rising out of the demise of newspapers? Where do you get your news? How do you think about it? 410-319-8888. Or I'll read this email from Kalila, who wrote in at steinershow@gmail.com. Kalila writes in, what about the onslaught of blogs on websites of newspapers that have very little journalism and turn to gossip columns? Where is the presentation of research stories presenting multiple ideas? It borders on tabloid journalism in too many situations. Legitimacy of these blogs as a news source is very questionable and cannot be what news is reduced to.
That's a good point.
That is what I tried to raise earlier again, Steve Janison.
I want to speak to that because that's an important point. We don't have blogs on our site. I think blogs are akin to columns, and I think it's the job of a journalist to observe, ask as many people as possible, get as many opinions, and there needs to be a distinction because a blog really doesn't. There is a different way of creating a neutral narrative of what's happening versus a blog, which I think is just like a column. And so we have sort of stayed away from the whole blogging concept. You know, our job is to report and give people at the scene information with investigative context, but our job is not to sit there and muse about what I observed or what I thought was, you know, from a personal point. I think you have to be careful when you're doing to not mix up the blog. There is a way, there's a culture to creating stories which transcends the medium, you know, and that is journalists, you know, you have to get both sides of a story. You know, you have to talk. And I'm sure there are a lot of people call up and say, Stephen, you didn't do that. Fine. I'll be held accountable. My name's on there. I'll take the heat. However, I don't think you should mix the two. I think you should let people know, and people will search it out because I think they want to make up their own minds, you know. So I think blogs fall into that dangerous zone where I'm just, you know, sort of opinionating.
How do you feel about Glenn Ford about the notion of blogs, and also how you?
It's a great question.
News yourself.
I hate the term blog, which I associate with people expounding on their personal views. In Black Agenda Report, the stories that we present are the same as if we were presenting in a print format. Now, regarding balanced reporting and that unachievable term objectivity, we do not respect anything that pretends to be journalism that gives lies, blatant lies, obvious lies, discredited lies, the same amount of space as the truth. We believe that real journalists have to say that some things are lies, especially if they're coming from the mouths of authority. You don't balance lies with you don't balance truth and lies. You smother the truth with lies. But maybe we're just in a semantic discussion.
No, that's a great point. That's a great point, because a lot of times if you're just following the government, you know, you can end up just writing a story that's completely useless.
410-319-8888, and what do our listeners think? John, in your car, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening.
Hi, John.
And thank you, Mark, for taking my call and your guest.
Thanks for calling.
And my question is this. Well, first I want to say I'm 52, and I'm going to go ahead and say that, get that out of the way. I come from a print year. Also, I like the commentary that was made about Black radio, because I grew up a lot with that as well. But my question is this. We have the Examiner, which I enjoy, and some talk radio I enjoy, which I listen to in the car driving from D.C. into Baltimore every evening. And I wanted to know, I think an idea would be with the type of investigative reporting that, is it Janice Stephen did?
Yeah, Stephen Janice, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Stephen Janice. I've heard you on other talk radio shows, and I was wondering why there isn't a merger of the two, because I think we got quality talk shows like your show, Mark, and then we got great reporters and journalists like these other guys. Why can't we have a merger of the two where we can get some talk, but then a full story live over the internet, you know, during the day, or when there's time when he's not in court listening to the trials or whatever. Why can't there be a merger of the two? Because I think that would bring also, it may draw some of the advertising dollars. And I know some talk radio shows do broadcast live over the internet.
Right.
But I don't find no content to a real story like the story that was just done about the police officer.
John, you're raising
that's
a good point.
Idea.
And Stephen Janice, let me let you jump in here, because we only have a couple minutes left, and I want to get back to Glenn as well for time here. But to have complete transparency, I should say, so Stephen Janice and I have been talking about that very idea.
Yes.
About how you marry the two with radio, the internet, and do investigative reporting and bring it to the airwaves as well as putting it on the internet, and how we marry and collaborate, because I think that is where the future is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think converge, they call it platform neutral, right? Well, you know, I mean, what does it matter? I mean, if we can collaborate with you and I can do some reporting and then you become like the forum for the story, for people to flesh out what they think about the story, it's perfect. It's a perfect marriage. Now that I know where you hang out in the morning, I know where to find you. You know? Because I didn't know that before. Now I know how to find you.
Come on out to the house. It's my hang and work. It's at my house.
I know where you hang out though downtown. So I can find you now. But I think it totally makes sense. It's a good idea.
Glenn Ford, a thought from you on the where the future is going. We only have like a minute left for that though.
Well, you've just been describing my ideal. And one of the things that I'm fond of saying is that talk radio without news is uninformed talk.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
that's mostly what we have. The ideal situation would be if there is a regular news presentation of various lengths and formats through every radio station, mandated by law. And of course, if that would occur in today's day and age, that would mean not only extensive use of the internet by the radio journalist, but extensive access to radio by the internet journalist.
Glenn, I'm sorry, but you've taken us right to the top of the hour. I thank you so much for being with us, Glenn Ford, and you, Stephen Janis. Go to blackagendareport.com and to investigativevoice.com to see interesting websites, web news sites. Thank you both so much for being with us, and all of you for calling in and writing. It's been a great show.
Thank you.
The Mark Satter Show is produced by the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Jessica Phillips. We're engineered by Zachary Coleman. Our interns are Christina Arison, Judith Lloyd, and Brian Boone. Theme music by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows and hear additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.